It's been remarked rather often of what a big job it is to put something like this on. And I understand that Roger and the committee, when putting it together, didn't know whether to have the old-timers panel at 1 o'clock or 10 o'clock. And somebody spoke up and said, those turkeys are liable to be asleep at 10 o'clock. Our friend here said to tell Roger to speak for himself. I've got notes on 4 cards, and they don't seem to be in order. I'm from Lima, Ohio. My home group is the Moon City Group in Wapakoneta. I think that's the home of Jack Armstrong. No, not Jack Armstrong. That's Wheaties, isn't it? Neil Armstrong. So if for any of you folks that don't know where Walpock is, maybe that will help you. Our president is here in the audience. I beg your pardon. Our fearless leader is here, Handlebar Rick. I also see John. And so the Moon City Group is well represented. I just thought maybe you'd like to know about that. Bob S. yesterday pointed out to us that there was a rumor and it became a reality that there are some Catholics that do drink. Early in my sobriety, I had the opportunity to also meet Sister Ignatia. And one of the things early, although I was crying on the inside, I recognized that most of these recovering alcoholics could laugh at themselves. And it really put me at ease. I just happened to have a story or two from the old days. In fact, they're probably so old that most of you have never heard it. I know you remember this, and I'll repeat it. They used to needle Sister about her ancestry and about all her countrymen that were in the program now. And it never bothered her because one of the reasons she took up the thing that she did was because she recognized that the Irish had a problem. And so she just told this guy, she said, you know, I realize there's a lot of Irish in the program. In fact, if you took the Irish out, you'd have to take out one of the eight. One other thing. There was an affinity between the Irish and our Native American Indian. And the alcohol seemed to have about the same effect. They tell the story about the Indian that was raised on the reservation, and after he became a teenager, he got into that firewater bad. And it got so that when he was just about ready to reach his majority, he created such havoc at the reservation that finally, which was unheard of, they threw him out. And about 6 years later, Here he come riding up to the reservation on a beautiful Palomino pony. Had a handmade buckskin saddle, or hand-tooled saddle, and a buckskin jacket. Beautiful. Moccasins by Gucci. As he reached the gate, the chief was sitting out there, and the chief got up and said, "How?" And he said, "Chapter 5. Of course, I could go on like this all afternoon, you know. If you notice the ribbons, last year I got to talk about 8 minutes at the old-timers panel in Columbus. Well, they gave me a little thin red ribbon. And down here in the front row was all these, you know, important people, and they had ribbons galore. And I tried to borrow some. They wouldn't give me any. So I had to go on with that one little thin ribbon. So I'm decked out this morning for that purpose. The fellow that wouldn't give me any of these ribbons also happened to be a fellow that was delegate in Columbus back in, 1973. Well, he was sort of the major domo, and I was his administrative assistant. And you know the kind of jobs that administrative assistants get. Well, that's what I got. And so any of you that are trying to climb the general service ladder, I got a warning for you. A month after the state conference was over in Columbus, I get a lien placed on me by the hotel that we held it at for $1,500 for coffee. Honest. So let that be a warning to you folks. You got to look out for these things. Now that former delegate is here today, and he's going to talk to us, not at length. We got him for about 8 minutes. I give you Lowell B.
I'm Lowell Beatty, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi. Tom has been worried about this time problem all week. You guys be sure and talk a long time so we won't have any more of those jokes. Just briefly what it was, and you can tell that retribution comes. Tom was at least 20 years sober. In 73, and I was chairman of the state conference, and we tried to get him to take a part. We wanted him to chair a panel, to speak, to do something. He wouldn't do anything, so we let him do everything else. And that meant sign for the coffee and all of that. Make sure there was always plenty. He was a great help to us, and you need somebody like that that knows what he's doing. I'm absolutely overwhelmed to just be on this panel, and I thank him for asking me to be there. Somebody took a picture a while ago. To have my picture taken with these guys is something. Did any of you ever think you would probably one day ever sit in an AA conference and see about six people up on the stage or behind the podium going to talk about alcoholism, and none of them had ever drank a light beer out of a pop-top can? I'm the newest sober in the bunch. I came awful close, but I didn't quite get one either. If we were to have to take breathalyzer tests this afternoon, I'm so far behind these guys, I'd probably flunk the test. Good to see a lot of you guys that I hadn't seen in some time. And your brides. It's an amazing thing when I haven't seen you for quite some time and then I see you, your hair gets grayer and your brides get prettier. Don't let that gray hair worry you. Hell, I used to have gray hair. I'm a past delegate from Area 53. I was on panel 23. And on that panel also, I see one guy sitting out there, a guy that calls himself Trouble. He is. John Baker from Cleveland was on that panel. And those out from the Toledo area that might remember Chuck Webb. And then Chuck Scherer was on the second year with us. Cincinnati was Ken Wilkinson, if you recall him. I'm one of those people that didn't have any problem with alcohol until I started drinking it. And I had been in hospitals and wound up finally making a cycle of four asylums. And I came here from the asylum. I had been told that I had a problem with alcohol. I had been told by ministers and doctors and relatives and people I know that loved me. But I didn't hear it till I heard it from these guys. These are the ones that told me, that made me hear it. Maybe they didn't individually tell me, but they told somebody that told me about it. And I remember somewhere back studying in college, reading about some great writer said that the greatest teachers in the world are not really teachers at all. The greatest teachers create situations where a vast amount of learning take place. And that's what these guys were able to do. Not long ago, there was an article in the Columbus paper about someone trying to get Ohio State to draw up a curriculum that would teach self-esteem. And I thought AA has had that for all these years. You have a self-esteem, but it's inside an ego. And these guys know how to crush that ego without even touching your self-esteem. And when you laugh, I know you've had a sponsor that has crushed your ego. But you still think you're good. You still know you're one of God's children. And if you're working the rest of the steps, you know you can do anything, that you are loved. You can do anything in the world, probably, except drink. And that's all the self-esteem we need at that time. But it starts to work. The program sometimes is, and I'm hesitant sometimes to get involved in what it's, whether it's program, fellowship, or whatever. There's a certain amount, I think, of verbal quicksand that we get ourselves into, and not us necessarily. We're saying what we learned from so many people that don't really understand what it is start to use that. Some of those principles and some of those slogans that are not entirely at all what they were. My entry came as a result of a psychiatrist telling me he didn't think he could help me anymore and asked me to come to AA, asked me if I would. And so I came as one of those people that a lot of you are like, and it's awful easy sometimes to be able to tell a difference. I didn't come here wanting to quit drinking. I came here wanting to get out of trouble and to not die. And I found just that. And now alcohol is not important anymore.
Now you understand what I mean by that. But that's dangerous for me to say to new people, and I seldom do. But I have got to, and I want to live the way I'm living now. Whether I drink or not, I still do. You have convinced me that I can't drink and live that way, live the way I want to. So alcohol is just no longer important. I don't have to stay sober, and I have to stay sober each day, but I don't ever have to say I don't drink, or I'm not drinking. I just don't drink today, and it isn't important to me anymore. As long as I keep doing what I'm doing to find this way of life, alcohol is not important. What brings us to this is this thing that we're talking about this weekend in large measure, and what Bill and or Bob and Nell were talking about yesterday or this morning, and others have talked about it, and that's what our message is. And our message is in the big book. That's exactly what this message is that we want to pass on. Sometimes the message I hear from podiums are not the same message in the big book. And I wonder what the new man sitting out there thinks. And I wonder if it's harder to finally get it. I had no problem at all believing that there was a power of some kind that had created all of this and put it together. And I grew up that way. And then I remember reading somewhere back in school about Henry Ford being interviewed, and someone called him a great inventor, and he didn't interview very much. He didn't talk very much. He quickly admonished him and told him that he hadn't invented anything. That all he had been able to do was put the components together to make it work. And Dr. Jonas Salk said much the same thing when they asked him if he discovered the vaccine for polio, and he said he didn't discover anything. He gave credit to the drug companies that spend billions of dollars taking the bark off of trees all over the world. If anyone discovered anything, they discovered it, but it was there all the time. Then God gives us a light sometime to let them put it in the proper proportion and in the proper way, a way to deliver it to the people that need it, and it works. And I am no longer even questionable or uncertain about the fact that that's what happened. That day in 1935 that Bob talked about this morning, those two guys were given a way that these alcoholics could find a vehicle of spiritual values that would lead us where we needed to go. And it's done that for me. It's been a succession of working the steps, trying to be of service. That's what works. I thank you again for asking me to be on this panel. I have enjoyed every minute of being with you. What this program is, and what I found when I got here, I wish for all of you. And God forbid that I would ever say or do anything that would make it any less than what it was when I found it. Thank you.
Thank you, Earl. The original panel here had 285 years sober. There was supposed to be six on the panel and myself. Five of them have been a part of my sober life all these years. The only one that hasn't is going to be our next speaker. I just met her today, and I'll ask Bavar to share with us.
My name is Beverly. I'm an alcoholic. I'm an embarrassed alcoholic. I fell asleep. I guess that's why there's the 10th step. So I was wrong, and I'm promptly admitting it for a change. I felt like an idiot when the phone rang. Rarely have we seen a person fail. You know, what's really embarrassing is I was sitting there reading the big book when I fell asleep. And because I was trying to think about what I was going to say when I got up here, and probably God knew better than I did, because every time I start thinking, I get in a lot of trouble. And when I was reading that passage in the big book, it talks about sometimes there are people who are not able or constitutionally incapable of being honest. And even that line gives people an out. It says, it doesn't say never can these people get sober. It says, you know, a few of them can. And I know that when I came to this program and listened to How It Works the first time, there are two things in this program that were the greatest help to me, and one was, rarely have we seen a person fail, and the first step that said we are powerless over alcohol in our lives and become unmanageable. And the thing that was important to me is it said we. Because I learned for the first time in my life I did not have to do something alone. I did not have to do the most important thing in my life alone. And the greatest gift that I got from this program, besides my sobriety, is the rest of the people that went along with we. And that means the people who came before me and the people who sit down and wrote those steps and wrote this big book and wrote all the other things. They wrote them because that's what they did. It was a collective thing of all the good things and all the things that made people stay sober on a daily basis. And I couldn't argue with that, because the people who did those things before I got here stayed sober. And I was listening today and last night to the things that went on before I came to this program. And I'm glad I didn't have to be here before the books were written. I'm glad I didn't have to do some of those things. I'm grateful that so many of these things were in writing and that somebody else had to do those things, because I'm kind of a chicken shit in a way, and I wouldn't have had to. I don't know if I could have done some of the things that the people who did before I came in this program did. I just know for myself that all the things that they did and told me that if I did, that they work on a daily basis. I came to this program like a lot of, you know, we all come to this program because we got in some kind of trouble, whether it's with ourselves or our families or our friends or with society. And I was fortunate enough that somebody offered me the gift of sobriety through prison. And there were people from Toledo and Columbus and Cincinnati and all around Toledo who got in their cars every other Sunday and drove down to Marysville, Ohio, and offered the gift of sobriety to the women down there. And some of us took it, and some of us couldn't, or didn't, or weren't able to. And I've been very fortunate that for some reason I believe those people. and this program does work. And I've watched over the years, I've watched people come in and stay sober and become my friends. I've watched people come in this program and become my friends, and then adults stay sober. Doesn't make them any less my friends, it's just they're not here anymore. And all they had to do to the best of their ability on a daily basis was follow the program. And it is simple. Sometimes it's not very easy. And nobody promised me in this program that things were going to be very easy. That it required the only thing that it required is not to drink today and change my life completely. That's all I had to do. But I only had to do it today. And it does work. And I know they told me that I had a certain amount of time up here, and I never wear a watch. So, you know, I really live on a daily basis. I never know what time it is, apparently. I'm just grateful to be here. I really am, and I'm grateful for all the people who came before me and for the people who lived this program before I came here and who took that piece of paper and pencil in hand and put those things down in that book and wrote those lines and those guidelines to sobriety. And I know in the beginning we hear that these programs, the steps are suggested and all these other things are suggested. And when I was around long enough, I come to understand that this is something I really needed to do if I wanted all the wonderful things that other people had and what they promised me. And nobody ever told me a lie in this program about staying sober on a daily basis. And everything in the world and everything in life is here as long as we do the things that we're told. And there's nothing wrong with a little guidance. You know, I think they say alcoholics are rebellious and don't want to do things and don't take direction well. If you really think about it, just kind of look around the audience and see all the people. And see all the people in this convention center, in this hotel, who've taken that direction and have listened to somebody else besides themselves and besides alcohol. We do take direction well. If we didn't, none of us would be here. Thank you.
Thank you, Bev. In 1950, in order to get the family off my back, and I had been in a doghouse a long time, I was the one that of a large family that didn't go the straight and narrow, and I had a brother who was a priest, and he suggested maybe I come to Cleveland and make a spiritual retreat. I didn't have any car. My father despised me by this time, and I didn't have any friends that would lend me a car. So I had to go over and brave my father's rejection. I thought, geez, if I go up there, maybe I'll get everybody off my back. And so I went over to my father, and at first he refused me. And as I walked away, he was on the porch and I was on the sidewalk when I asked him. And when I was walking away, he in a miserable voice, he said, "Come back here." And he just took the keys out of his pocket and threw them at me and said, "Take the damn thing." So I borrowed $15 someplace and went to Cleveland because, you know, us drunks, we pay our way. You know, I don't know whether I ever paid that 15 back. I lost who it was. Well, I went, and as you know, God is there ahead of us. And I walked right into an AA retreat. And, of course, they gave me a name at the end of the thing because they didn't know about AA in Lima. And the fellow's name was George Skinner. I had served him booze many times as a bartender in Lima. Didn't like him. He was one of those loudmouth SOBs that you could do without. He just gave you trouble. And I had him on the phone in 30 minutes, and there were two meetings in Lima, and this was on a Friday, and he took me to Finley College, and I went to my first meeting, and I heard a lady from Defiance, Ohio, give the talk, and her name was Dorothy Squires. I had been sober 5 weeks then, and I could understand her. She was a kindred spirit. I met Rance Hoffman at the same time, and a fellow that's going to share with us right now, he also has been a friend all these years, Gunny Devin.
I'm Gunny Westwick. I'm a recovering alcoholic. Now, I know you people are very curious, and I don't want any of you to die before this here thing's over. So, I'll tell you, I was born in February the 6th, 1917. I come into this program February the 6th, 1950. If you can't figure, have a fit. Now, I've got a lot of supporters here. Pauling, Defiance, if you all stand up, we'll show them for small little places they have support in AA. See, we blow our own. We tell them they got to go to the conferences because that's where they learn everything. So if you people don't get together and talk to them, they might go out and get drunk, so don't let them do that. I'm not going to tell you how to stay sober, because if I would, you'd all get drunk. I'm going to tell you how I did it. I came to this program for a way out. Through my brother. And I made him pick me up to take me to these meetings. Because I wasn't going to waste my money on gasoline for one of these outfits. I figured it was an outfit. I asked him, I says, who goes to that program? And he says, I can't tell you, it's anonymous. So I had to go. I walked in there and I saw three guys that I fell off the bar stools with. I never knew where they went, see, because I was drunk all the time. Okay, as I went into it, I'm not going to give you no drunk along. Because if you want a drunk along, see me after the meeting and we'll meet out there in the lobby, and about midnight I'll get through. But as the meetings went along, I went to these meetings. I came, see, to AA, curious. And when I got these sponsors all telling me, we had a lot of them, we had a lead meeting, then we had our meetings after, and I'd say, I don't think I'm an alcoholic. They'd say, there's the door, don't let it hit you in the ass going out. Well, you get mad, so you would actually say, I'll show them, and you'd stay sober. So as things went along, finally, I came to. How many of you came to in an AA meeting? About every one of you, didn't you? You came. You came to. And then what happened? You came to believe in this program. If you didn't, you might as well go out and get drunk. That simple. See, this is a simple program for complicated people. And boy, was I complicated. Let's see, I got two more minutes. No. What
After I came to believe, I was telling my sponsor one day, I said, but I didn't do all them things. I don't believe I'm an alcoholic, full-blown. He said, I'll tell you what I want you to do. I want you to go home tonight, get on your knees, no pillows, and ask something that's higher, that you think is higher than you are, to help you. He didn't say to remove anything. He said, to help you. I did that. I thought he was nuts, but I thought, well, I'll try it. And the funniest feeling come over me. I don't know if he was trying to take the breath out of me or take me up to wherever he was supposed to be. And that night, I came to believe in Alcoholics Anonymous. Through the people that were there before me. So my responsibility is today is to try and pass this on, just like Lowell did, just like the lady did here. See, when you come to AA, especially women, and I'm glad she's here today, because I know what you women would have said. See, they blocked that woman out of there. And I'm sure she has to give you a lot of support. But see, she told you how to work the program. Now, you women all, go ahead and do that. See if it'll work. Anyway, as I work this program and tried to help people to the best of my ability, I learned in my morning prayers to ask God to give me one more day of sobriety, and that's all he can give me, because that's all I need. And to help somebody if they were in trouble. If it was his will, not my will. Because if it had been my will, I'd have probably drank with him. So I used God's will. And as long as you use God's will, you got a relationship with God, you will not drink. If you do, you said it with your lips and not with your heart. If you don't like that, well, that's all right with me too. You take this program and you get a little serious with it. And I went through some hell, and I didn't have to drink. I went through some sickness with my wife, who died in a convalescent home. I didn't have to drink. She had, I don't know, 14 different operations. I was able to give those to her because I was in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was sober. I was working every day. I had good insurance. They paid the hospital bills. When it come to the home, they didn't. I had to pay them. But we had the money for what the hell spent it. It was on her health. But God saw fit to take her. Did I go out and drink? No. I said a prayer for her. And I said a prayer for God because he took her home. He took her out of her misery. See? We got to be able to accept things in this program and stay sober. If we don't, we're in trouble. I believe in my higher power, and as long as I believe honestly and truly and ask him for help, he'll give it to me. Now, all you people, and I've heard this in meetings, says, I prayed to God and he paid my rent. Bull crap. He doesn't pay anything. He don't have no checks up there. He don't have no money. If the hell, he'd have to drop it on your head. He gave you the talent, and if you come to this program and get sober, you can go out and get a job. And don't tell me there's no jobs out there. I don't buy it. You can take and go and with the talent he gave you, get a job, whether it's sweeping streets or what, and you'll have some money. you'll be able to do. See? Every talent you have, you can better yourself. I bettered myself. I worked 25 years in this last place of work, and I bettered myself then because I got to retire. See? And I am having the time of my life down here today because this might be my last one. I live today for today. So enjoy your day. Have a lot of fun. You don't have to be holy. We're only humans. I still like these women. I get hugs from them. So don't think this is, it's like John Long used to say, it's all right to look, but don't touch. So now they hug you, whether you want it or not. But see, this program is not only recovery, it's enjoyment, and it's clean enjoyment. Before, it was dirty enjoyment. I went through many a door in a saloon, and at some time I had a shirt in my hand yet, but they got me out of there. I came to this program, and I'd like to say that I hope all of you work this program and pass it on, because God has a job for you to do. I think He gave me a job. Yeah, my chicken died, he said. That's a joke we got. God gave me a job, left me live this long, one day at a time. And did everybody figure out how old I was yet? See, you can't add or subtract, can you? But God gave me this just for today. He let me enjoy myself up here. And I'm 77 years old, if you don't know. That saves you from figuring all that and counting on your fingers and toes. And He'll show you how to do all that. Today, these kids are more educated than I was. And they're young kids. I don't know how to run a computer, but I might take it up again. Just try. Mark down there, I'll have him as a teacher. Because he knows how to run computers. I'd like to say something about a couple of my friends here. There's Sid here and Mark. Well, and there's Dick over there. They make damn sure that I don't think stink. And Mark brought me up here. Doug come along. See, I got all the protection in the world, even God. They got their image of God and their way of working with God, and I got mine. And we don't even argue about it. But we have a hell of a lot of fun. So I wish everybody here a nice sober day today. And I want to thank you for being here, because you've helped me stay sober through you and through these people that's here. And if nobody said they loved you today, I do. I love each and every one of you. Because if I don't, I'm no good. All the people here, we don't have to like somebody, but we better love them if they're in trouble. We better be there. Thank you.
He ran over. I was sober 4 months in the program. Really was sort of unexpected, because I didn't go to Cleveland to quit drinking. I went up there to get everybody off my back, but AA was there and I went. And I realized that I had a problem, but I also realized that I was in serious trouble.
4 months after I was in, my father walked, come over to my house. He never did understand AA, but he was tickled to death. He walked in and he said, "Give me $10.
Go ahead.
He said, "Give me $10. And I was surprised, and I gave him the $10, and he handed me the keys to his car. And he said, "You owe me 390 more." Now I own a car. I figured that was a gift from God, and I made it my AA car, because you know they say that you should do something for somebody else. Well, some of us dummies don't know what the hell we could do for anybody, but I thought that was my AA car. One of the things that we did in Lima was that there was quite a few that would make the outside meetings. And one of the places that we used to go every Tuesday was Tiffin. And there was about 10 or 12 males at that time, as I remember, that were gung-ho, and they had a great meeting. And so we usually made that meeting at least twice a month. And one of those fellows that was there at that time is here tonight, and he's going to share with you, and that's Scotty.
Kendall, too. Well, my pa and ma that make home brew, they drink till 10 and pistol, too. So, you know, it's great. I always wanted to get in a good big group like this. You know, Tom said they used to come over. How many? I don't know. Just how many. There wasn't too many around. At that time, there wasn't too many groups. That's why you traveled. You had to. That's what I was telling some of them there, you know. If I don't tell a story, Tom, he won't forgive me. I had an old-timers meeting down Tiffin one day, and I had him on the panel down there, and I told his story, and the next time I seen him, he hadn't forgot it yet. It amazed me. But the story I got today is this boy and girl was walking down through the creek bottom by the creek, and they were walking along. He looked over at her, and he says, "I got a notion to duck you." She says, "Oh, no, you ain't. You can't even pronounce it." So, I guess that's good enough, Tom. So I don't know what, you know, they got the theme supposed to, but I already told them I'm going to say what I think, and whether it's on the theme or whether it ain't. But that's the way I still do. It's a good thing Tom didn't have my friend come up on the panel, because he went one time clear over in Indiana, him and his wife, to lead a meeting. And they got there, just the two of them went. The meeting was ready to start, and the chairman told him, "You've got 30 minutes. He didn't say a word. And when he got up, he opened the meeting. He said, "I drank too much, too long, and too often. That's why I'm here. Let's say the Lord's Prayer." Come on, Harriet, let's go. That's just what they done. So I don't know. I guess I can hold it down, you know. He said he was born in 1917. I was way ahead of him. My wife had a birthday Monday. She was 77 years old. She's born in 17 too. So I got you. I didn't have to do any figuring, because I better know how old she is. I told somebody the other day she'd be 78, and I ain't lived up and down yet either. There are a lot of things, you know, that you don't live down. I brought a bunch of notes along, but I don't know. I'm only going to get a few of them out. But when I come in, AA, I asked for it sitting on a bar stool. Somebody asked me, how'd you get in? Oh, that wasn't where I got in, but that's where I asked about it. And then I used to say I was asked in, but guy I knowed worked at the shop, and I heard he didn't drink. My neighbor man didn't. And another fellow I heard quit drinking, and I wouldn't ask any of them. I'm sitting in there, and I wasn't going to take a drink that night at all. I'm going to show them. Took my daughter up for her music lesson. It had been some bad nights on music lesson night. I promised she wasn't going to go anymore, but I got home that night without a drink. Then I went downtown, fooled around. I went in the bar, my favorite, and I got a few, and I knew I was in trouble, because, and then this guy come in. I picked my wine and my beer up, you know. I was still one of them nice winos. Sleep under bridges, but I never got under a bridge. But that was my favorite, and the reason for that was I was raised on a farm, and my dad used to make wine, and I liked it. I imagine I still do, I don't know. But when the wife would go along to the grocery store and so on, if I happened to go down the wine aisle, she'd growl like heck. Wanna know what I'm doing. Well, I looking to see what the price was, because you know, back in my wine days, if I took my half-gallon jug and took it into this place, he filled it up for 90 cents, and that left me a dime to drink a big beer on while he's filling the jug. That's the way that was. I ain't going to tell you how far back that was, but it was back a little ways. How it was is, and rarely have we seen a person fail, they tell me Tom picked that topic out. My sponsor failed. I don't know just how long afterwards. I come in, knocked over, he got his job, I went back to work in March or April, and he didn't work but a month or so till he took off. He never did get back in. He got on drugs, he got in everything. I even tried to sponsor him, and that don't work. So, I don't know. The greatest thing of this whole program is walk, carry your head up. You don't know who's watching you. I've had it happen I don't know how many times. They wonder what happened to you. Finally, they'll get nerve enough to ask you. But this man here will chew me up if I don't mention the red necktie. That thought just came in. See, I never know where I'm going to talk. I'm liable to start at the bottom end and come up instead of the top end down. But his redneck tie deal, the Tiffin group used to wear them. Tom remembers it, and a few more of them. How it all started, there was a man in Tiffin, a lot of people in Toledo knew him by the name of Father A. We used to travel with him, take him around different times, go to meetings. He led down in Barberton, Ohio. There was, eight of us went. We got together before and we all got a red necktie, not this kind. We had ties. Everybody had a red necktie on. We sat in the front row just like his folks are here, you know. Sat in the front row, and when he opened the meeting, he said, look at that bunch. Looked like a bunch of dogs with their tongues hanging out. After that, every place we went, we wore red neckties, wives and all. I was telling a couple of the gals that the wife wore a red necktie too on her blouse. We was known all over. We've had 18 of us at Founders Day. We had 18 down the High and Penn one day, all red neckties sitting there. We had known pretty well around for the red necktie bunch. Them's the things that makes the program work, as I see it. This program is half fellowship. If you ain't got no fellowship, you ain't got no nothing. That's the way I see it. As I said that back when I come in, and I don't know what it was all about anymore. I can't remember. Somebody said something to me. Oh, the guy come out the house that night. That's what I wanted to say. When I left the bar, they even wanted to drag me home, but I wouldn't let them. I told them no. So I asked them where the meeting was. They got me talked into going to Holy Smoke. They got to talk me into going to meeting. I agreed. I asked them where it was, and they said down to Bucyrus in some certain church. I told them that's just what I thought. It's a bunch of church-going stuff. There's the door, the road, Tiffin's that way. The wife tells me it took them another hour to get me calmed down and agreed to go the next night. Now this is where the grace of God comes in, whether you've been talking to him or whether you ain't. I got home the next night without a drink. They come and picked me up. I ain't going to tell you what I had at noon. I damn near didn't get back to work, but I did. The man that led that night talked an awful lot on the first drink. It's only two things that I have to remember. All of you should remember the first drink. I used to think that if I wouldn't have stopped that last place and drank them two, everything would have been all right. That ain't where it started. It started at the first stop. Do this one day at a time. You can't handle it any other way. I can't. One day at a time ain't too long. They told me that. If you think this don't work and you don't think that it's anything spiritual. The program's not no religion. It's all spiritual. I got to going to church. What do you know? They made me a trustee up there. In 14 and a half years, I was on the trustee board. Now then, you can believe it or not, from my learning up till that time, I had some great arguments with them birds, what they wanted to do and say and so on. I told them it wouldn't work. They don't like it. Some of them still don't like me today. I still go to the same church as some of the same ones there. When I come to the program, I don't know just how many was in the group in Tiffin. They're all gone but one now. He'd have a little more time in than I got, but he went back out for 5 years. I made him mad a few times too. He'd tell somebody he had more time than I did, and I'd tell him he didn't. Remember that, Tom? That was taking place down in Lima. Oh, that's the way it seems to go. I had a person here ask me if I was going to read a poem today. Every time that I talk or anything, I always read a poem. I said, yeah, I'll read one. As I got two of them, but I'll only read one. I don't know where I even put it. I sat over here and got it all ready. You know, we have another speaker. Okay, Tom. Well, I tell you, I'm going to cheat on him a little bit. What the ham did I do with him? I put it someplace. Tom, you got me all worked up. Don't make any difference, hell. We'll give them your cards. Them won't. No. That wouldn't work. But you know, there it is. I knew I had it all the time. Don't resent growing old. Many are denied the privilege. See, we had a daughter killed, 27 years old, in an auto accident. I'd been dry 20 years, and I almost went burst. They still tell me about it. I guess I just like the old drunken days. My son-in-law, not the one that was his wife, the other son-in-law, he thought I had a bottle hid out. He followed me every place I went. That's what they thought. I didn't get to work for a week. This thing wasn't working, you know, alcohol. I'm right back. See, but I didn't take a drink. Thank God. I'll read you a poem, then I'll shut up and let this man go here. And if you can stop him on time, Tom, do it. And if you can't, let him go. One day at a time. We worry about our tomorrows, often missing the joys of today, troubled about what may happen, yet tomorrow may not come our way. Life's pathway is ever uncertain. Right now is what's yours and mine. The future is safe in God's keeping. We live but one day at a time. Thank you. That was only 10 minutes over.
You notice in the old days they didn't have a watch. We were too poor. Now they got a watch and they don't pay any attention to it. In 1936, at 3 o'clock in the morning, about half in the bag, I went into a gambling joint on the north side of Lima, which was just at that time full of open joints of that description. There was a drunk at the end of the table, and there was hardly anybody in there. And I had 10 bucks, and so I threw it on the crap table, and I ran it up to 100, and the drunk at the other end was an older man, and he was all over the place, and he got even on me. 2 days later, he called me and asked me if I'd like to 10 bar for him. And so I said, why should I 10 bar for you? I don't even know you. He said, I was that guy at the other end of the table. I'd been 10 in bar for about a year, so I went up, and he's offering me $10 more than I was making, so I grabbed it. This was a Japanese restaurant with an American that owned the bar. The Japanese fellow was a great guy, and he never drank. The three of us that were there, besides two more bartenders, but three of us were alcoholics and didn't know it, of course. This was a young people's place, and a lot of them come in. We would serve them if they were 18. They were supposed to be 21. It wasn't until much later, and I was in the program, I ran into this fellow that I used to serve, and I said, well, it didn't make any much difference about, we served everybody when they were 18. And he told me, Tom, he said, you didn't know it, but I was only 15 years of age at the time. He's our next speaker, John C.
My name is, I had it here a minute ago. My name's John. I'm an alcoholic. I read something about old timers that I did some studying here. And the one thing that I remember, it said someone you wouldn't trust to give you directions to the corner store will be considered a font of great wisdom when age has further deteriorated his faculties. I don't know where to start here, where to finish. I was thinking about the old days. The biggest difference that I see now and when I first came in, one is the insulated cups. The new people don't remember, the latest guy got on the kitchen detail. And if you can imagine washing out and drying the cups for this group here after the meeting was over, you can understand why we got the newest one to do it. I'm supposed to be happy, joyous, and free for 8 minutes, and I'm going to do the best that I can. I had a lot of good bad examples when I came into AA. My first experience in AA was in Denver, Colorado. And the second time that stuck was at MacDill Field in Tampa, Florida, where I got in with AA with the people that were the most helpful for me at the time, anyway. I had a lot of good bad examples in my early years because I was told, I've spilled more on my tithe than you'll ever drink, and maybe you ought to go out and try it for another 10 or 12 years and then come back. Tom and I are both from Lima, Ohio. There isn't much to see there, but what you hear makes up for it. Anyway, like I started to say, when I got into AA in Tampa, Florida, I had a lot of good bad examples. We had a man one night stand up after the meeting. He said, is it the drinking that makes me nervous or the nervousness that makes me drink? And everybody had a good laugh on that. And we read his obituary in the paper, and the next day he had hung himself. It wasn't funny after that. There's no stupid questions here. I worked my first job out of the Army. I was with the Breakfast of Champions. I was selling mail pouch tobacco. And we had a convention in Detroit. And this young man my age got pretty loaded that night, like they always do at conventions, and he had his big identification badge on, and he lived in Detroit, but he said to me, he said, I know some girls around here, why don't you and I go out after this is over? And like I say, I was sober and I was in AA at that time, thank God. The next morning, they had every available policeman and detective in Detroit out hunting for somebody who had tried to break into five different homes and had killed a woman with a stapling gun that he had in his hands. And he still had his badge on. Total blackout. Good, bad examples. My next door neighbor bought a gun on the 24th of December and used it on himself on the 26th. He was 32 years old at the time and was independently wealthy. Those are the things that stick. This is a serious program. It doesn't mean that we can't have fun. It doesn't mean that we can't joke. The joy of living is the theme of the 12th step, how to be happy. Is there anyone in the audience old enough to remember Griff Graham from Fremont, Ohio? I used to tell the story and Griff liked it. This was the classic alcoholic who ended up under the bridge. And he had scrounged a piece of paper and a pencil and he wrote his father a letter. He said, Dear Dad, all the dire predictions you've made for me have come to pass. He said, I'm a completely bankrupt individual. Bankrupt mentally, physically, morally, financially. No good to myself, my God, or my fellow man. And he happened to notice the sun reflecting on a piece of glass, and he got up and investigated, and there was a full pint of Muscatel there. And he unscrewed the cap and drank the pint down and picked up the pencil, and he said, In conclusion, if at any time I can be of assistance, don't hesitate to call on me. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, John. A while back, I went to Sydney, Ohio to the Tuesday night meeting, and a fellow led there. He was from the Dayton area. He'd been sober maybe over 30 years now, and I had never met him. But in his talk, he reminded me of the time when I first come in, that when you walked into a AA meeting, the women were on one side and the men were on the other. And that's the way they conducted the meetings. And he said that he and his wife were having problems, and she insisted that he go to an AA meeting, and they didn't know anybody in the program. So when they walked in cold to a meeting, they knew where it was, and so they sat down together. They noticed that the people were separated, but they didn't know the custom. And so the speaker started, and every time she made a point that the wife liked, she'd kick him in the leg. And he said he attended meetings for almost 3 weeks before he tumbled while they were separated. Boy, we're quitting right on time. Yes. And we wouldn't be able to run over, as I was instructed by the illustrious chairman, because the Al-Anon people are coming in. It's been a privilege to be a part of this panel. It's nice to be with people that you've long known and respected, and it's been a part of our sobriety. Every one of us will carry those kind of thoughts and with us as we go. This panel especially is near and dear to me, and I'm very grateful for their friendship and all of you. And if you don't mind, we'll stand, and if those who wish, we will say the Lord's Prayer.